I just said that.
I know you just said that.
Okay, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Well, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
That's what I just said.
That's what I'm saying to you.
All right.
There we go. It's Touche. It's Monday night here on The Download, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me, the Touche players, Dave Lundy and Chris Roebling. They join us every Monday night. Tonight, we
play.
Can we switch roles?
Yeah. Can I play Roebling and he plays me? Because one day we got to do April 1st. If we have a show on April 1st, that would be awesome.
It would be good.
Awesome.
And yes, I do
awesome.
Mean playa with an A. So playa.
Playa.
Okay, so President Obama comes to town tomorrow for his farewell speech, and we thought tonight would be a good night to sort of assess the president's legacy. 8 years as president of the United States. We'll talk with Dave and Chris about four different areas. First, we'll get a summary, if you will, to begin. But we're going to talk about the economy. We'll talk about social agenda. We'll talk about foreign policy, and we'll talk about politics. That's on the agenda tonight for Touche. Why don't we start with you, Dave Lundy? Give us your overall sort of statement about the Obama legacy.
You know, I think that Barack Obama's legacy is going to begin and has to begin with saving the world from economic collapse. Everybody forgets what we were going through in 2008, 2009, when we were losing 750,000, 800,000 jobs a month, when the after Lehman Brothers fell, and then you had other financial services firms also fall, and literally the economy, the entire financial fabric of our planet was on the brink of total collapse. And in fact, I was at a speech at David Axelrod was speaking at the City Club today, and I've heard him tell this story before, and he was telling the story of during the transition when all the economists, one economist after another, were coming in the room and giving all the bad news. And the news was catastrophic, like we are about to all die. And they were all looking to Barack Obama to see how would the president-elect respond. He's a young guy, doesn't have that much national experience, didn't exactly have a distinguished record in the U.S. Senate. And he was steady. And it was steady leadership. And it was like, look, we just have to figure out how to solve these problems and focus on solving the problems. And I think that you cannot talk about Barack Obama and as much as there are problems, there are issues, but you have to start with he saved the world.
Right.
And, you know, the economic expansion that we've had, you know, it hasn't been the best post-war expansion because the damage, the carnage was so
vast.
Well,
we'll talk about economy in just a moment. Chris Roebling, why don't you get your sort of executive statement, if you will, on Obama legacy.
He's going to say, yeah, what Dave said is right.
A tissue of lies. Because the left knows that their stuff will never sell. And Barack was their, I think, dreamboat candidate for his vast personal likability and his sort of admirable story of coming from a unusual background and achieving all these heights of Columbia and Harvard and working out here in Chicago and making it to the U.S. Senate. But I think his policies were not even they were way too far left for the Republicans, but they were not nearly far left enough for the leftists. And I think that he ends up with he personifies this James Carville insight, which is you will never satisfy the left wing of the Democratic Party. But I think that we're going to get to politics, but it precipitated this reaction, this equal and opposite reaction, which is going to wipe out whatever tiny bit of substance he actually accomplished. And I think that along the way, unfortunately, instead of being a voice of reconciliation, instead of fulfilling the hope that everyone, including myself, genuinely had after the 2004 convention speech, instead of living up to his own speech, he became a polarizing and destabilizing figure. And I think he implicated sacred institutions.
All right, let's get to economy, chapter one. So the economy numbers, I mean, you're seeing a lot of it today. Just the sort of breakdown of as 2016 came to a close, you've been seeing sort of end of year media that the economy has grown, that the unemployment rate is down, that Barack Obama has had tremendous success when it comes to the numbers. But you know, and that's what I want to discuss. Do the numbers, are they accurate? Are the numbers, do they actually portray the America we're living in?
So I think that, look, the numbers are the numbers. And I'm a data guy, and I go by the data, and the data is crystal clear. When Barack Obama came into office, all the numbers were bad and getting worse. The economy was in free fall. Unemployment was surging towards 10%. And the market, the stock market was at less than 8,000. It's now at almost 20,000. And we've had more than 75 consecutive months of private sector job growth. Now, is it 400,000 jobs a month? No, but it's been averaging about 180 to 200,000. And the most interesting thing, and this speaks to the carnage that had taken place before, and particularly in the housing sector, job wage growth didn't come back quickly. It really didn't. And I think that really Obama and the Democrats struggled against that fact because people weren't feeling it in their checkbook until this past year. And in the last year, wage growth surged at literally record levels. And that was both the salaried wages and then just this last unemployment report that came out saw the highest jump in hourly wage growth in a generation. This stuff matters. But I think that, you know, it's hard to divorce the numbers from the politics, because when Barack Obama came into office, the Republicans decided that despite the fact we were in economic turmoil, despite the fact we were in a massive crisis, they decided on January 20th at a Mexican restaurant with about 35 of them there, the story has been well documented repeatedly, that they were not going to allow Barack Obama to have any successes, period, full stop. They said, we cannot allow that or we will lose for a generation.
And we'll talk about that in politics. The economy, Chris, I mean, this is where Democrats will say that Barack Obama did well. That he, you know, we pulled us out of a tailspin in 2008, 2009. And the numbers do say that the unemployment rate has gone down, that the numbers are going up, the stock market's going up. So, I mean, a success for President Obama?
Well, I would say it's kind of a C-minus success. I mean, I look, 150,000 to 200,000 jobs a month for 75 months is an accomplishment, and no one will ever take that away from him. And that's better than a lot of alternatives. Is it as good as it could have been? I don't think so. And here is why. It's not just the labor participation rate. And I know David's got his, you know, litany of reasons why labor participation isn't as significant as I like to think it is. But be that as it may, it's not just that. It is kind of the waiter and bartender recovery. I mean, because the wages have not been there. And I believe that this speaks to another issue, which is a determination, a hard and fast ideological determination by Valerie and the president that they were going to shape the economy in their in the shape of their preferences, okay, and their predilections. And they and if black unemployment in the inner city for youth was going to remain high, it was going to remain high. And if they were only going to get to 225,000 jobs per month, they're only going to get that far. And they made a decision, I think, after actually keeping faith with what Bush had begun before Obama took office, because as David likes to forget, the Fed had already intervened massively in the economy, pumping up the economy. So David likes to say everything started on the 20th of January 2009. Of course, that's not right, but we'll skip over that right now and just get back to the fact that they decided not to do more with the economy. They decided that their regulatory agenda and their government growth agenda and their taxing agenda were all more important than freeing the creative forces in the United States so that we could participate in this early 20th century global. I mean, there are things going on around the world.
So does that mean regulations? What do you mean by that? I mean, you think they sat behind a closed door and said they didn't want that?
It's this mix of very high regulation, in my opinion, stifling regulation. Regulation that, according to the various circuit courts around the country, has gone beyond the legal basis for their action. So they over-regulated in that technical legal sense. But economically, they strangled innovation and entrepreneurship and the kind of growth that we could have.
I hear the regulation argument, and I understand it because I have some friends who are in the financial sector who will point out, they will say, it's paperwork, it's an extra thing, everything about it.
It's a fortune.
But weren't you billions. In a situation in 2008, 2009 that we were in because there was not enough regulation?
No.
That we saw subprime lending?
No, really? We were not underregulated, and that's not what led to the Wall Street situation, Chris?
This is not the topic. If we want someday to talk about 2008 and what led to it, is a fascinating conversation. I don't think it's really the Obama legacy issue. But the fact is, I think that they decided that slow growth was enough growth, and they didn't take steps like John F. Kennedy to cut taxes, to grow the economy, to spur greater risk-taking.
Nobody decides that slow growth is the way to go.
Here is why decided that, because they went for 8 years and they never improved.
No, what you just said was just factually, historically wrong, inaccurate, false. You said that they decided that government growth is more important. Government grew less under Obama than the previous three presidents.
That's only because the Republicans got
Obama. No, it is not because the Republicans. Republicans.
I'm sorry.
No, that is just factually.
All right.
Once again, you're factually wrong.
You can take a look at the growth curve.
Touché.
The growth curve, David, changes when Obama was stuck with his own
Curve changes when Obama is stuck having to live with a Republican Congress who refuses to do things like what Donald Trump has promised. This is not political. It's economic. What Donald Trump has promised to do, which is an infrastructure spending program. What the Democrats
spent $938 billion,
David.
And
half of it, in order to satisfy Republicans, was in tax cuts, not in the much more effective actual spending.
It was $938 billion. And of that, Democrat administration could find only $38 billion in transit and infrastructure. And go back and check it, because that is the fact.
Chris Roebling, Dave Lundy in studio. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back.
Else was for the public employee unions. The unions ruled, and the rest of us took it in the shorts.
All right, let's take
GM
a break.
GM is alive and Obama and
we'll
Bin
take
Laden's
a break.
Dead.
We'll come back. We'll do foreign policy. Stay with us.
Touché.
All right, Touché here on the Download 720 WGN. Dave Lundy, Chris Roebling in studio as we talk about the Obama legacy before his farewell speech tomorrow night. McCormick Place will be broadcast on NBC. It'll be broadcast everywhere. I don't think it'll be here because of the Blackhawks. But let's talk about, so we had talked about four different areas to talk about. We're not going to have enough time. So social gay marriage.
Because Obama's accomplished too much.
He really is. gay marriage for social, political, gridlock in Congress. We good? All right, moving on. Foreign policy. Let's talk foreign policy. This has been one that, you look at the successes of Obama of ending a war in Iraq to actually the death of Osama bin Laden, to what's happened in the Middle East, to the sort of Arab Springs and the other things, to some of the things that didn't go well, the controversial treaty with Iran, the Syria, there's other things.
Justin, Chris's head is a combined.
I know, Chris is really.
I got news for you. He didn't end the war in Iraq. He walked away from Iraq ill-advisedly, and by doing so, he left open this vast void for ISIS to fill. And then he and Kerry admits this personally in his own voice, used ISIS as a bargaining chip against Bashar Assad, thinking that ISIS coming from the east would cause Assad to negotiate with them.
But Chris, wasn't the goal?
Let me finish.
He ran on the idea that he was going to get us out of Iraq. Correct?
Well, unfortunately, instead of getting us out in a way that preserved what we had gained, okay, we lost lives. We've spent a fortune. It was poorly operated by Bush. There's no question about that historically anymore. So it was. There were good things and there were horrible things. But it was handed over to him as a functioning as a functioning, very young, very fragile democracy, and he handed it off to the Shias. I think Barack Obama will go down. His legacy will be handing off to the Shia, to the mullahocracy in Iran, all of the northern Middle East, so that you now have from Karachi all the way to the Mediterranean, the influence of the mullahs in Iran, destabilizing Egypt, destabilizing Libya, destabilizing Yemen, destabilizing now Oman. People aren't talking about Oman. Oman is under the gun because of its position as a transshipment point between Yemen and Iran. And Iran is sending weapons through Oman to Yemen. His has been a record of disaster in foreign policy.
You know, look, Chris. Chris earlier in the show said that I like to think the world started on January 20th, 2009. He does too in certain respects, and one of them is foreign policy, because Chris conveniently forgets that the reason many of us, myself included, opposed the Iraq War was because it was going to create a power vacuum in the Middle East, which Iran was going to surge into. They surged into it long before Barack Obama was even running for the presidency. And that was a done deal. Al-Maliki was a Shia plant, was an Iran ally. The Iraqis are an ally of Iran. That was not done by Barack Obama, Chris. That was done by George W. Bush into the decision to invade Iraq ill-advisedly. You cannot ignore that. It also led to the rise of ISIS. You cannot ignore the role of who founded the core of ISIS.
Now, let me ask you this, because the one thing that
what
has
David
been very
said was
controversial.
Fatuous nonsense.
And 100%
go ahead. No, I mean, I'll get back to it.
Let me ask you. No. Let's get to the idea that, you know, when it comes to fighting terrorism.
Yes.
You know, we've seen Barack Obama, President Obama, employ a strategy of drone warfare.
Yes.
We've seen him sort of decide, you know, we're not going to invade countries like we did in George W. Bush tenure, other tenures. I'm going to have sort of war from above. Has that been successful? I mean,
no.
Yes, we haven't had troops on the ground, but there has been casualties and things.
Well, and you do have troops on the ground. I mean, look, I will say this, and Chris knows that I feel this way because he and I talked about this as this was all unfolding. I happen to believe that the president badly underestimated the threat of ISIS. I think the folks around him badly underestimated the threat of ISIS. I think when he got into it, he responded too timidly. I was with Hillary Clinton, who wanted to arm some of the moderates in Syria. I was frankly more hawkish than Barack Obama. We don't agree on how the Iraq War ended and how we wound up with the Iranians in control of the Middle East. But there's no question, and I think history will judge this, that the president did not succeed in how he responded. When he first responded to ISIS, rather than doing shock and awe, I did like six. The day he decided to attack, he dropped six loads. He did six sorties. No. These are bullies. They're the worst kind of bullies. And he did not respond effectively.
This represents the left's approach to, quote, national defense. They are unable to robustly defend the United States, its allies, or the interests
that we have.
Yeah.
You cannot get away with nonsense.
Hold on
like
just
that.
One second. And your earlier point was fatuous nonsense for the simple reason that if we knew, and we did know, you're absolutely right, we knew that al-Maliki was a tool of the mullahs when Bush handed off to
al-Maliki.
Barack. Okay, when Bush handed off to
who
Obama,
put al-Maliki there, Chris?
And when we knew that, and the point that makes it more important than ever for Obama to have managed the situation. Instead, he walked away.
Obama cleaned up Bush's economic mess, but he didn't fully clean up a foreign policy mess.
No,
is
I'm
that
sorry,
your big
he
complaint?
Made it worse. It's not that he didn't clean it up; he made it considerably worse. And people, hundreds of thousands of innocent Middle Easterners, have paid with their lives. Because Obama, Kerry, and Clinton never really understood what they were doing.
And now you're reinventing the Syrian history.
No, that's not right. I've got to say this. He announced with great fanfare a historically important pivot to Asia for the 21st century. And then he essentially abandoned it. He announced with great fanfare a reset with Russia. And he sent Hillary over there for a photo op, but which, you know, Lavrov was laughing his head off at her. And basically lost all of that momentum. So I don't think. And then he went around and he was supporting Hugo Chavez and he was conceding
he
to
was
the
not
Cuban
supporting
dictators.
Hugo Chavez.
He did everything conceivably possible to not destabilize the Chavez regime, and people are dying in Venezuela today.
I understand, but I guess overall, though, I mean, to get back to your point that the left, this third idea of how the left approaches foreign policy, there's not this sort of push to invade. There's not this push to arm and do exactly what happened in Iraq. Is that? I mean, that's kind of what the country was asking for after Iraq. It was asking for this idea of why are we doing that? So in a way, he played that out. Now you're saying we want to go back to the other.
No. I think that there is a vast panoply of national power, and only some of it is force of arms. A vast amount, socially, economically, financially, okay, politically. Through multilateral organizations, there's vast amounts of things that can be done to achieve a national or an alliance objective. And I believe that these guys came in, they know they did. I mean, Samantha Power sat down the hall and said, not do stupid things. And instead, I think that they're going to be looked at as having failed on that test.
All right. So we did foreign policy. We did economy. I feel like we still need to do social. We need to do political because they're two big parts of the Obama
presidency. We can stay after the hour.
Yeah, we got to move on. Jeannie Gang's going to be here. But you know what? Next time we get together, let's talk about those two topics because I think that you both would have insights and opportunities to argue.
And we have time.
We have time. That's right. Chris Roebling, Dave Lundy, appreciate you guys coming in.
Thank you, Justin.
Touché.
Touché.